Hello and welcome to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Belinda Walia. Today's conversation explores human behaviour at a deeper level, the patterns that drive our decisions, the beliefs that shape our lives, and the way we assign meaning to our experiences. We often move through life reacting to circumstances without fully understanding the perceptions and values influencing those reactions. Yet, when we begin to understand how the mind works, we can start to respond with greater clarity, balance, and intention. Today's guest has spent decades studying and teaching exactly that. The amazing Dr. John DeMartini is a human behavior specialist, educator, and author known for his work on values, perception, and personal transformation. His work focuses on helping individuals understand themselves much more deeply so they can live with greater purpose, alignment, and fulfillment. Dr. DeMartini, it's such a pleasure to have you with us today. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for this opportunity.
So, Dr. DeMartini, your work has spanned through decades. Looking back, what first sparked your fascination with understanding human behavior?
When I was 17 years old, I had a kind of a brush close to nearly dying, and I got inspired to go to a yoga class where a guest speaker, Paul C. Bragg, was attending and the guest lecture. And this one man in 1 hour shared a message that inspired me to believe that someday I might become intelligent. I had learning problems as a child and I had a speech impediment. But the night I met him, I had a dream that maybe I could overcome that and someday learn about human behavior, learn about healing, and I wanted to travel the world and research and teach that. So 53, almost 54 years later, here I am. I full-time travel and, you know, research every day and write every day and teach every day. So that was my dream. It started that night and it's been with me ever since. That's when it all started, studying human behavior, particularly the psychology underlying illness and health concerns.
That's an incredible journey. Thank you for sharing that. What really stands out is how a single moment of belief can shift everything, especially when it meets challenge early in life. And here you are, decades later, still living that same vision with consistency and purpose. It's a powerful reminder of what can grow from one inspired decision. When you do speak, you speak a lot about values shaping our lives. How can someone begin to recognize that what truly drives their decisions rather than what they think should drive them?
Well, when I was 23 years old, I asked myself a question. Why do some people walk their talk, some people limp their life? Why do some people do what they say, others don't? Why do some people flourish, others flounder? And that led me to the study of human motivation. And that the study of that was the study of values, axiology. And I read every book, every text that was available on the topic at the time. I could get it in English. And it really was limited. I was really surprised that such an important topic actually hadn't been written about that much. And I started to devour the philosophers and thinkers that were behind it. And there was a David Hume, a Scottish philosopher, that said there's an is and an ought. Notice, what are your values? What do they actually are versus what they ought to be in society? And most people are trapped in the oughts instead of what they actually are. And each individual has a set of priorities or set of values that are unique to them, fingerprint specific. And they determine how the individual perceives, decides, and acts. And based on what's highest on their value, the very highest value is intrinsic. And as you go down progressively lower, they become more extrinsic. And therefore, they spontaneously act on the things that are above, but they need motivation, external motivation to do the things below. So if you're going to excel, it's knowing what those values are, the highest values, and prioritizing your life accordingly and sticking to the highest priorities if you want to excel. Otherwise, you're going to be constantly needing external motivation, doing the things you think out of duty that you ought to do instead of what you're inspired intrinsically to do. So this has a big impact on what overall levels of fulfillment, achievement, and performance is.
That's fascinating. Thank you. Because what you've really highlighted then, I believe you're describing, is the gap between how people are actually wired and how they believe they should be. And when those two are out of alignment, it creates so much internal conflict without them even realizing why. And I think that's where so many people find themselves stuck pushing through rather than actually feeling fulfilled. And many people feel stuck, but they can't explain why. From your perspective, what is usually happening beneath that feeling?
Well, again, whenever you fill your day with high priority actions that are intrinsically driving you, that inspire you, you spontaneously act. The blood glucose and oxygen goes into the medial prefrontal cortex, which is the seat of the self in some writings. And this is the area where we have the most order and organization and objectivity, and we're more adaptable and resilient there. And whenever we're living by progressively lower values, we go into our amygdala. Our blood glucose and oxygen goes in amygdala, where we seek prey and avoid predator. We're striving to divide things up and look for one-sided outcomes, which are futile. And anytime we meet somebody that we think supports our values, we tend to look up to them. And if they challenge our values, we tend to look down on them. If we look up to them, we tend to inject their values and try to live like them and envy them and imitate them, which is not going to work. And if we look down on them, we try to project our values onto them and try to get them to live in our values, both of which are futile. Anytime you try to live in other people's values or try to get others to live in your values, you have a non-sustainable futility. But the second you love yourself enough to be clear about what your values are and give yourself permission to live by priority and then do the same for others and help them do what they want so you can do what you want, you're back in the flow again. So values underlie really, they're one of the most crucial components of mastery of life, is knowing what the values are of yourself and others and honoring what you do at the same time and honoring other people's and not trying to change you into them or them into you.
And that's really a rich insight there, because it connects the psychology with what's happening in the body in a very grounded way. And that piece around trying to live in someone else's values or expecting others to live in ours really lands, because it explains so much of the tension people experience in relationships and within themselves, always trying to find that inner respect, that inner control, that and when you're clear on your own values, it naturally allows space for others to live in theirs without that need to change or compare. And that's where relationships start to feel a lot more balanced and sustainable, especially the relationship we have with ourselves. And you often say perception shapes reality. So how does that play out in the way people interpret challenges or setbacks?
You have expectations, you have associations in the past, and then you have, in a sense, the synthesis of that, which are perceptions of the new experience that's coming in, the evoked potentials, we call them. And so if you have somebody that you expect to live in your values, or you expect them to be one-sided, you're going to feel let down and feel betrayed, because you have an unrealistic expectation on them to be a one-sided individual. Kind, never cruel, nice, never mean, positive, never negative, peaceful, never wrathful, generous, never stingy, this kind of thing. And anytime you expect a human being to be one-sided, you're going to be let down because your expectations are unrealistic. When somebody supports you, you can be nice to them, but if they challenge you, you can be mean. And sometimes if somebody gives you something that's, or asks you something that supports your values, you can be generous. And if they ask you something that's not, you can be stingy. So we have the capacity for both. We're not one-sided individuals. And then if you expect somebody to live in your values and not their own, you're going to feel betrayed. And it's not because of what they did, it's because you had an unrealistic expectation. So your expectations have an impact on what you think the world's doing to you. And you can become victims of history or masters of destiny based on these perceptions and expectations. So in the past associations, if you've been with, you know, let's say dated five men in your life, and all of them have been challenging to you, now you have an expectation based on those past experiences, and those associations are going to taint what you perceive. So all of these play a role, and they're all value-supported or challenged behaviors that you've stored in your hippocampus and your brain. Anytime you look up to somebody and put them on a pedestal, you're going to inject some of their values into your life, and you're going to try to be like them, and you're going to end up having what Freud called the superego, which is an internalization of an outer authority's values. And that's where you get all the shoulds and ought tos and supposed tos and got tos and have tos and musts and need tos about how you should be and live by duty according to these injected values. And that's not who you are. You're not doing what you love. You're doing what you think you should be doing because you've injected the values of somebody you put on a pedestal. And when you put people in a pit, you tend to project your values onto them, and you then should them and ought them and got to and have to and must and need them and project your values and then expect them to live in your values. They can't live in your values and sustain it, and you can't live in other people's values and sustain it. And that's why knowing your own and knowing theirs and knowing how to communicate what you would love to do in terms of what they would love to do liberates you.
And that's a really powerful way of explaining it. Thank you, because it shows how much of what we think is us is often shaped by past experiences and people we've put on a pedestal. And when those expectations and internalized values take over, people can end up living an impression, obligation, rather than authenticity, which really can cause a lot of stress. So is it possible to completely remove stress from life, or is it more about changing our relationship with it?
I don't know of any human being that isn't going to have some sort of polarity. See, anytime you're living by lower values and your blood glucose and oxygen goes into your amygdala, which is a subcortical nuclei in the brain, anytime you do that, your amygdala is going to want to avoid predator and seek prey. It's going to want to avoid challenge and seek support. It's going to want to avoid pain and seek pleasure. That's its job, to protect for survival purposes. It's a fast systems one thinking process that is for emergencies. And anytime we do that, we now are striving for that which is unobtainable and trying to avoid that which is unavoidable. And the more polarized and valent we are in our perceptions, the more we fear the loss of that which we seek, and the more we fear the gain of that which we try to avoid. And that's all stress is. Stress only comes in two forms: the perception of loss of something we seek, or perception of gain of something we're trying to avoid. And so our valency from our amygdala and hippocampus in our subcortical nuclei, that's where our stress responses are. But if we live according to our highest value and we bring our blood glucose and oxygen into the forebrain, the medial prefrontal cortex, we're more objective, we're more neutral, we're more balanced, we're more comprehensive, we have a wider view, we see both sides of things, we don't see things black and white, we see more gray. And as a result of that, our valency and charges are more neutral, and we don't have the fear of loss or the fear of gain, and therefore our stress levels reduce. Now, in our life, every time we know something and love something, we do reduce our stress. But whenever we're emotionally polarized, we add to our stress. And so I think in life, we're going to have both. We're going to have moments of stress and then moments of calm, and then moments of stress and moments of calm. I think that's to be expected. Anything other than that, because otherwise you're not growing. You're constantly, when you grow, you take on new challenges and you take on new mysteries. Whatever you know, there's always what you don't know that's always vastly more. So you're going to take on those new challenges, and each time you're going to have new unknowns. And it's the missing information in our unconscious that's part of our stress sources.
Thank you for that, because it makes it clear that it's not just what's happening around us, it's how we're perceiving it. And we're...
Exactly.
Yeah, and so we're caught in that survival mode, aren't we? And everything becomes polarized and reactive, but as soon as we shift into a more centered state, there's a sense of balance and perspective. And what you're describing really highlights how much our internal state shapes the way we experience the world. So thank you so far, Dr. DeMartini, for sharing such valuable insights. We're going to take a short commercial break with a word from our sponsors. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia, and today I'm in conversation with the incredible Dr. John DeMartini, exploring the deeper patterns that shape how we think, feel, and respond to life. Welcome back, Dr. DeMartini.
For having me again, it's been a great interview. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. So what role does balance play in emotional and mental well-being, and is true balance something we can realistically achieve?
There was a great book in 1932, I believe, by Walter Cannon called The Wisdom of the Body. And in there, he said that our external environment is, and our perceptions of our external environment constantly perturb the stability within. But we have homeostatic feedback systems inside our body by the thousands to try to bring us back into balance. It's like a thermostat. If it gets hot, we sweat. If it gets cold, we shiver. And it basically keeps the internal environment, the internal milieu, as him and Claude Bernard described, in balance. And when we have balance, we have stability. And so the more we destabilize ourselves with imbalanced ratios of perception, the more our body has to work to restore us back into the balance. And chronically, destabilization can activate either too much parasympathetic or sympathetic activity in the autonomic nervous system and create an autonomic dysregulation. And in the process of doing that, we get symptomatology. But our symptoms are nothing but feedback mechanisms guiding us, if we know how to interpret them, to change the perception. For instance, if you perceive, you meet somebody and you perceive and you become conscious of the negatives of that person and unconscious of the positives, and you have an instinct to avoid them and you resist them and they approach you, you'll have a sympathetic response. When you do, your blood pressure will go up. Your low density lipoproteins will go up. Your platelets will go up. Your blood pressure, your heart rate will go up. and your blood sugar will go up. If you have that chronically and you're constantly in a situation that's like that, you could end up with hypertension and diabetes. So chronic sympathetic activity like that and inflammation, because pro-inflammatory cytokines go up. So the symptoms are letting us know that we are having an imbalanced ratio of perception. We're perceiving that we're conscious of the downsides, but we're not conscious of the upsides. If I go and find out what are the upsides, I can change the neurochemistry. I can change the hormones. I really believe that each of the different states, pride, shame, infatuation, resentment, guilt, whatever emotion you have, it's a ratio of perceptions and it's a ratio of neurotransmitters and hormones and regulators. Each of these are changeable by asking quality questions. The quality of our life is based on the quality of the questions we ask. And if we ask questions that make us conscious of what we were unconscious of, if we're negating somebody and we're now conscious of the positives, we can stabilize and bring our hormones and our transmitters and our autonomic nervous system back into balance and stabilize and bring our health back. The same thing if we're infatuated with somebody and blind to the downsides. We can ask questions to become conscious of the downsides, stabilize it, and neutralize the seeking and avoiding mechanism, which affects glucagon and insulin and all the transmitters and hormones that are in the body. So we literally, our perceptions and our ratios of perceptions are manifesting as symptoms, but we don't study and we don't get trained on applied physiology. We just have palliative healthcare out there, and palliative healthcare just treats it with a drug many cases, and it doesn't actually give the people their power back to be able to change their perceptions and change their physiology and take command.
That's incredibly insightful, and I'm sure our listeners will really appreciate that, because it really brings together the mind and the body in a very practical way. And what you're describing shows how our perceptions aren't just psychological, they're directly influencing our physiology. And I think that's where we do turn to medication. We do turn to other outlets, don't we? I think people need to be more conscientious of that. It's a very important point. So thank you for sharing.
We've had many people who are on insulin for diabetes. Many.
Yes.
And we make a list of every individual that they have resented or are currently resenting, past or present, that they have an avoidance response, an instinct to avoid, a memory that's stored in their hippocampus that's got a pain without a pleasure, a negative without a positive kind of thing. And we make a list of them all. And then we identify what specific trait, action, or inaction that this individual, really clear and concise on what it is, it's why they're resisting and avoiding that individual. And we make a list of them. Then we go in there and find out how did it help them? How is it helpful to them intellectually? How has it helped them in their career path? How did it help them in their financial objectives? How did it help them in their relationship? How did it help them in their social leadership demands and focus? How did it help them physically? How did it help them spiritually? And we just hold them accountable to look and find the upsides and these downsides. And the glucagon automatically comes down and the insulin goes up right on the spot as we do that. Oh. We've done this over and over and over again. And what happens is people store in their hippocampus long chronic memories that have never been neutralized and never been resolved. And they end up having these chronic sympathetic reactivations. Anything that kind of reminds them of the original situation, it's like an anxiety response, is constantly keeping the sympathetic system firing, which literally elevates the glucagon, lowers the insulin, raises blood pressure, and creates sort of a metabolic condition and a diabetic, pre-diabetic, and a pre-hypertensive condition. And they don't even realize that that's something they can do something about. And they, instead of just taking a palliative care by taking insulin, they have the ability to alter that physiology within asking questions. But nobody takes the time to do it. Nobody's making them do it. No one's making them accountable to do that. But it's drastically changing it. And I've seen it over and over again. And so I'd rather give people their power back and make them realize the power they have within inside. The power that made the body is what heals the body. We have an innate ability to homeostate and bring ourselves into wellness, but we're not really taking advantage of the power we have within. We just automatically give it off to somebody else because we think we're ignorant about it because we've never taken the time to explore it. So I'm a firm believer in giving people their power back and helping them with asking questions so they can change their perceptions, their expectations, and therefore their reality, their whole physiological response.
And that's a really powerful approach, thank you, because it shifts the focus from simply managing a condition to actually understanding what's driving it at a deeper level. And so how can someone begin to become more aware of the unconscious patterns that may be holding them back?
I said the quality of your life is based on the quality of the questions you ask. And a really quality question is one that equilibrates the mind. It brings equanimity and objectivity to the mind. Let me put it in this way. Let's say you're single and you meet this really, really hot guy.
Yeah.
And you think, oh my God, this is amazing. And you're a bit enamored and you're a bit blinded by some puppy love and you're infatuated with them and you are conscious of all the positives and you set up a fantasy, which is a gentle distortion that the amygdala does. And you then want to consume them. You want to go after them with an impulse and you can't live without them and you fear their loss and you're all infatuated. When you do that, you're blind and unconscious of the downsides. Now, when you try to sleep at night, you have insomnia because you have the fear of loss of the prey that you're wanting to consume. Mm-hmm. And so you're on alert and then you're fantasizing all night about this prey that you want to eat. Excuse the expression. This person that you're infatuated with. Yeah. And so anytime you're infatuated, that which you infatuate with becomes intrusive in your thoughts and occupies space and time in your mind and stored in the hippocampus, in the place cells and the direction cells and distant cells in the hippocampus. So we have this insomniac thing. I've got this fantasy, I can't sleep at night. On the other hand, if we're really resentful to somebody and we're conscious of the downsides and unconscious of the upsides, again, we now have a nightmare, intrusive thoughts that occupy space and time in our mind, and we can't sleep at night because now we feel the predators after us and we can't escape the predator. Anytime we have a highly valent perspective, positives over negatives or negatives over positive, we're gonna have these intrusive thoughts. Insomnia is not an illness so much as it is an accumulation of imbalanced ratios of perception that are sitting there vying for seeking and avoidance impulses. And the fear of loss of that which you seek and the fear of gain of that which you're trying to avoid, this is the stress that keeps you up at night. And so if you go and ask questions, the thing that's up, what's the downside? Our intuition is constantly trying to do that. When a woman's infatuated with a guy, there's a part of her that's whispering, you know, don't rush this, keep your eyes open, don't be gullible, you know, check this out, be patient. It's whispering, but the impulse of the amygdala sometimes overrides it and we ignore the intuition. And that's when it's wise to use systems two thinking and ask questions. How specifically, what's the downside of this individual? What am I overlooking? And bring those back into balance. The second you do, you sleep soundly. You don't have a fantasy. The same thing on the negative side. You sleep soundly. You don't have a nightmare. A balanced mind opens the heart. And when you have an open heart, you rest, you know, with centered and with homeostasis. And we're constantly being bombarded by these misperceptions, primarily because of what we've been taught. We've been taught moral hypocrisies all our life. Be kind, don't be cruel, be nice, don't be mean, be positive, don't be negative. And we're trying to get rid of half of ourselves and try to be only one-sided. And we're trying to do that to the people around us. But that's not possible. No human being is one-sided. So these unrealistic expectations that we impose on ourselves, these moral hypocrisies, this information that's really misinformation, bombards our life and sets us up for, in a sense, these unrealistic potentials in life. We can't possibly get a one-sided individual. Imagine being married to somebody that's only one-sided. It's not going to happen. They're going to be support and challenge you. They're going to be nice and mean. They're going to be hugs and slugs in that relationship over time.
Yes.
So if you don't have a real balanced view and you have expectations of one side, you're constantly going to perturb yourself and illness is going to be your friend trying to get you back into balance. The symptoms are your friends. They're just misinterpreted.
Wow. That's a very compelling way to put it, because I think, and it's a really grounded way. So I think it challenges the belief so many people hold without questioning. The idea that we should be one-sided creates pressure. And as you've explained so beautifully, that it's that pressure that keeps people unsettled. And when you start to see both sides as part of being human, there's a sense of relief. And already I'm feeling it within myself just listening to you. And the body no longer has to work as hard to bring you back into that balance. So thank you for sharing that.
Well, you know, when I ask people, I teach a program called the Breakthrough Experience, where I help people break through these delusions that we do. Paul Dirac, the Nobel Prize winner, said, it's not that we don't know so much, it's we know so much that isn't so. We're bombarded with misinformation. So I in this program, I ask men or women, I said, if I just met you and I came up to you and I said to you, you're always positive, never negative, always kind, never cruel, always generous, never stingy, always giving, never taking, always peaceful, never wrathful, always positive, never negative, always considerate, never inconsiderate, would you believe me? And they go, no. Their intuition whispers the exact opposite of what I'm saying about them.
Yes.
If I then turned around and said, you're always negative, you're never positive, you're always cruel, you're never kind, you're always wrathful, never peaceful, always negative, never positive kind of thing. And I went the other extreme, they would go, if I asked them, do you believe that's you, the way you are? And I go, no. I said, but if I told you sometimes you're nice, sometimes you're mean, sometimes you're kind, sometimes you're cruel, sometimes you're positive, sometimes you're negative, would you believe me? And they go, yes. See, we only have certainty when we embrace both sides of ourselves.
Yeah.
But most people are trying to get rid of half of themselves, half of the world around them, half the people in the world, and they're trying to get caught in a moral trap, a moral hypocrisy that they're not living, and they're expecting other people who can't live it. And that's the source of the stress. The very polarization expectation response is the very source of stress, because now once we polarize it, we fear the loss of that which we seek, and we fear the gain of what we're trying to avoid. And so those are very common. So when I tell people in a relationship, if you're expecting somebody to be one-sided, they can't live up to it. There's no way they can win. And there's no way you're going to be pleased. You're always going to be feeling angry because you're expecting something that can't be done.
Yes, absolutely. And
your testosterone will go up, your estrogen will go down, your glucagon will go up, your insulin will go down. Welcome to these unrealistic expectations and what they drive physiological symptoms to be.
That's a really powerful way to bring it together, because it strips the things back to something very real and relatable. And what you're again highlighting is how much pressure people place on themselves and others by expecting something that simply isn't humanly possible.
That can happen.
Yeah.
There's a thing called hedonic adaptation. The second you strive for something that's pleasure, the pleasure diminishes the next time you strive, and the next time you strive, and eventually it calms down back to a set point. It's a homeostat. It's trying to get you back into balance. The same thing as you had something that's painful. You have a desensitizer to make sure that the pain is less and less and less each time. So we automatically have a homeostatic mechanism trying to bring us back into balance. And we also have in our psychology, we have what is called a moral licensing effect. The second we do something we're proud of, we automatically give ourselves permission to do something we're ashamed of. We go work out, get ourselves really tight in our abs and things, and then we give ourselves permission to drink, overeat, and stay up late. And then the second we do something we like over pigging out or something like that, and then we have the discipline the next day to go out and work out. So these are oscillating homeostats trying to get us back into a set point where we're stable. And the thing is, we get addicted sometimes to one side. We want to be proud without shame. We want to be positive without negative. And these things create instability and destabilizing of our homeostat. But we're taught that. We're taught to try to be one-sided by these moral hypocrisies. And the reality is, I want to be loved for both sides. I don't know about you, but I want to be loved for the nice, the mean, the kind, the cruel, the positive, negative, the peaceful, the wrathful. And I think that if I have that expectation to honor and appreciate that in both sides of others, it makes life a lot more fulfilling, because you now have realistic expectations that people aren't betraying you about.
And there's a lot less tension, because you're no longer fighting reality. You're actually working.
You're creating a false reality. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why You know, the Scottish philosopher David Hume said, there's is and ought. The way it is, the magnificence of the way it is far greater than the fantasy of how it ought to be. And that's the thing. We get caught in the oughts about how the normative, deontological, dutiful ethics about how we're supposed to be instead of honor who we are. And I think we don't need to get rid of any part of ourselves to love ourselves.
Yes. And that shift into realistic expectations, both of ourselves and others, is where life starts to feel a lot more steady and fulfilling. And I love that.
Now they can live up to it. You're not constantly portraying, you're not constantly promoting betrayal in your life for yourself and other people. Mm-hmm. As Alistair MacIntyre wrote The Brief History of Ethics, said very clearly, some of these moral hypocrisies are the very sources of ideals that we strive for but never obtain. And then we beat ourselves up wondering why we're not one-sided. And then we beat other people up. And a lot of our conflicts are coming because of these fantasy, unrealistic in-group, out-group biases.
Yes, and that's amazing. Thank you so much, Dr. DeMartini, once again for sharing such powerful and thought-provoking knowledge. We're going to take another short commercial break with a word from our sponsors. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia, and we're continuing this fascinating conversation with the amazing Dr. John DeMartini, exploring awareness, perception, and how we can begin to live more intentionally. I'm so glad to have you join us today, Dr. DeMartini.
Thank you for having me.
How can someone begin to take control of their thoughts and responses instead of reacting automatically?
I think that each individual, because they have a set of priorities, a set of values that are unique to them, like a fingerprint, it's taking the time to prioritize your day. You know, I really highly productive people prioritize the actions they do, the perceptions they do, no matter what happens in life, how is it helping me fulfill what's most meaningful to you? If you ask that question every day, then things are on the way, not in the way. You're now master of destiny, not victim of history. And you prioritize who you associate with, and you prioritize what you eat, and you prioritize where you go. And if you prioritize what you read, if you prioritize it and really ask, what is the highest priority thing I could be doing right now? You're going to get the blood glucose and oxygen going up into the forebrain. Your executive center is way more balanced. It has more realistic expectations. And as Wilhelm Wundt, the father of experimental psychology, said, it has the awareness of both sides simultaneously. And it's less polarized by the amygdala's seeking and avoiding mechanisms. So you're less stressful. Anytime you feel like you're doing the very highest priority actions in the end of the day, you feel you're on top of the world. You have more broad-mindedness, more objectivity. The second you're doing low priority things and living by duty and subordinating to outer authorities constantly, you're going to end up feeling like you're putting fires out all day. You're not going to feel fulfilled in life. Your fulfillment is directly proportioned to how congruent you are with your highest values. So if you live by priority, you reduce a lot of your stresses. You reduce a lot of the drama. You reduce a lot of the false attribution biases and credits and blames and dissociations that you have. So it's where you're empowered. So I say that the highest priority we can do is to prioritize our lives. You know, I learned a long time ago to identify what are the highest priority actions I can do in a day, and I stick to them. In my case, it's teach, research, write, and travel. I haven't cooked since I was 24. I haven't driven a car in almost 36 years. Anything that's lower in values, I hire specialists to take care of. And people say, well, that's, yeah, that's fine because you're independently wealthy. No, that's how I became independently wealthy. I started to do what my core competence is, and I stuck to what's really deeply inspiring and meaningful, and I prioritized my life, and there's less drama from that. And if you surround yourself with people who love doing what you want to delegate, they're inspired, and now you surround yourself helping people get what they want, and you get what you want.
And that's a really powerful way to bring it into action, and because it moves from theory into something people can actually live by. And what you're saying is very, it's that fulfillment. It isn't accidental. It comes from consistency and aligning.
Just prioritization.
Yeah, and exactly. Aligning your day with what truly matters to you. And when people begin to do that, everything shifts, I suppose. There's more clarity, less noise, and a real sense of direction rather than just reacting to life. But
exactly. You're proacting. The medial prefrontal cortex has spontaneous action potentials that we automatically act. Just like a boy who loves his video games, you don't have to motivate him externally and to evoke him to do his video games. He spontaneously does it. But to do his homework, his chores, or clean his room, you may have to motivate him with reward if he does, punishment if he doesn't. If you're living your life through rewards and punishments externally, you're missing out on the magnificent calling from within. And when the voice and the vision on the inside is greater than the opinions on the outside, you begin to master your life. But that requires complete prioritization. And most people don't give themselves permission to prioritize their life and take command of their life and be masters of their destiny. They constantly are basically subordinating to the world around them. They're conforming and fitting in instead of standing out and making the difference that they want.
As a psychotherapist, I come across this often where people can't really accept the good, the bad, the ugly aspects of self. And the self-awareness is something we work on. But when people face difficult experiences, what is the most helpful way to reframe or understand those moments where they feel there's limiting beliefs or they feel stuck in life? Well, I mean, I know you spoke about it earlier about how to change those moments, but how can we help people understand those moments that it is in their hands, really, and they're able to do it independently?
Well, the first thing to do is stop running the story that it's out there.
Yes, externally.
You know, it's not what happens to you. It's what you perceive, decide, and act from what happens to you. You know, William James, the father of modern psychology, said it's the greatest discovery of his generation that human beings can alter their lives by altering their perceptions and attitudes of mind. Yeah. So every weekend in the Breakthrough Experience program that I teach, I have people come in and they have all kind of horrendous stuff that they label as terrible. So-and-so did this to me and this happened to me and this. And I go, great, how did it benefit you? They go, what do you mean? No. And they want to run their drama and run the narrative about how this thing is the cause of their problems. And they create these false causalities and attribution biases to these people and things. And they go into blame. And they basically disempower themselves because they don't realize that their perceptions are what make that happen, their expectations. So if I go in there and ask them, so how does it help you? How did you grow in that moment? What did it do for you? And they stop and go, well, there is no benefit to that. I said, well, as long as there's no benefit to that, you're going to be having that occupy space and time in mind, haunt you through your life, have difficulty sleeping, blame people on the outside, disempower your life, and create your illness. So let's go and look again. How did it benefit you? And within minutes, they start, you know, with little help sometimes, they start seeing things they never saw before. It made them more independent. It made them driven for their goals. It made them start to interact with people differently. It made them communicate effectively. It made them go back to school. And they start seeing, well, wait a minute, this thing is not not even a challenge in the first place. It was a catalyst. And that's a post-traumatic growth instead of post-traumatic stress.
Yes. I love that. I've come across that a few times and I've also spoken about it. And I love the fact that you've talked about post-traumatic growth because it's such an important point and it's a powerful reframe. So thank you.
Yeah, I can I share an example one?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So here's a lady that comes to my program, The Breakthrough Experience, in Florida. This has been a few years ago. And she wants to run the story. She's been going for, I think, 43 years to a therapist who, I guess, you know, there's different therapists, as you know. There's some that are really kind of broader and more helping them become more aware, and others want to just keep them in their victim mentality. And so what happens is this therapist kept her going, that her mother abandoned her, rejected her. She was no good. And that's the story and narrative she's running. And so for 43 years, her narrative was that I was an abandoned child. I was rejected. I was not wanted. And of course, she devalued herself in that story. And then she ended up with guys that would do the same thing and over again. And this is her narrative. And I said, okay, let's stop the narrative for a second, because, you know, it gets kind of boring to listen to. And let's just find out, go to the moment, and let's find out what you mean by your mama leaving you. Well, my mom, left me. Okay, what did you think you missed out on? Well, I missed out on somebody to nurture me, and somebody to talk to me and guide me. And she made a list of things that she thought she missed out on. Great. Who came into your life to provide for that? She paused and she said, nobody. I said, look again. Nothing's missing. It just changes form and new people emerge. So who is it came in? And finally she said, my aunt. Great. Who else? My best friend's mom. Who else? Best friend's mom again. Who else? Next best friend. One of my teachers. I said, so you can see that the quantity of what you thought you missed showed up in other people. Yes. What's the benefit of them showing up and bringing that to your life? Well, the more diversity, I got to speak a different language. I got to see a whole family that was together. My mom and dad divorced. And then I said, so let's go back. If your mom had given you that particular behavior, what would have been the drawback to you? Mm-hmm. She said, well, it wouldn't be a drawback. I'd be happy. No, that's the fantasy. But fantasy is anytime you're expecting something other than what's real right now, you have a fantasy, because that's not there. What's here is what's real. So if your mom was the way you thought she'd have been, what would have been the drawback? Then she paused and she got teary-eyed and she said, wow. I said, what is it? She said, something my aunt told me when I was 4, when my mom left. I said, what is it? She says, my mom had bipolar condition and left me in a bath that was overheated water and kind of scalded my skin and forgot that I was there and got preoccupied by something else. And then I almost drowned. And then as a result of that, my mom found me, and then my aunt said, the reason your mom left is not because she didn't love you. The reason your mom left is because she felt that she almost killed the daughter that she loved, and she felt her sister would do a better job at raising her than what she could provide with her health condition. To keep her away from it so it didn't disturb her in her life. It was an act of love. It wasn't a rejection. The entire story, she cried and bawled and realized that the story that she'd been running that was supported by somebody on the outside was not even true. When she did, her perception of herself changed. Her desire to want to do something more amazing changed. She wanted to go and find her mom and thank her for doing that, because she started to see the benefits of what the people that in her life gave her. And she went on to write a book and change her whole dynamic. It's not what happens to you, it's what you decide to do with it. And the thing that's interesting is, it's not on the outside. It's our perception and expectations and associations about it. We can transform it. If I slam your thumb with a hammer, you're gonna go, wow, that hurt. Why'd you do that, you terrible person? But if I gave you $1 billion cash, $1 billion US free, if I got to slam your thumb, you'd say, slam away.
Yes. It's a really powerful example there. And I think the story that you shared can really reshape someone's perspective and life altogether. So it shows just how powerful a shift in perception can be. The moment that lady you're talking about saw the same experience through a different lens, everything changed. I think that's amazing.
Good question. The quality of our life is based on the quality of the questions we ask. If I just asked her questions that nobody asked her for 43 years, it was ridiculous that nobody asked her, what's the other side of it? What's the upside and who took on the role? We go around thinking that things are supposed to be in our values all the time. And if it doesn't be that, if it's not showing up in our values, we think we're missing something. We're not missing anything. You know, I always say at the level of the essence of the soul, the real authentic you, nothing's missing. At the level of the existence of your senses, the false you, you think things are missing. Anything you're too proud or too humble to admit that you see in others but you don't see in yourself is a missing part, a disowned part, a dismembered part. And so that holds you back, caught, being caught in those parts instead of integrating and seeing that nothing's missing. It's there. That's what fulfillment is. Our unfulfillment is all the perceptions of missing parts.
That's amazing. Thank you so much, Dr. DeMartini. I think that's a beautiful note to end the show with. And thank you so much for a thoughtful and insightful conversation. Your perspective on human behavior, values, and perception brings a deeper understanding to how we navigate life. And I know this will resonate with so many of our listeners. So if anyone wishes to learn more, where can they find you?
Simply go to drdemartini.com, drdemartini.com, drdemartini.com. They can go in and learn how to determine their values. There's a free value determination process. Just determine your values, look it up, and you can go on there, and it's an educational website. You could go on there and just spend the rest of your life sitting there with education, of all the video, audio education.
That's brilliant. Thank you for sharing. And thank you to everyone listening to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. If today's conversation resonated with you, please do share it with someone who may benefit from hearing it. To close today's episode, I've chosen a snippet from a piece that reflects depth, clarity, and perspective. Arrival of the Birds, the Cinematic Orchestra. Until next time, take care of yourselves and each other.